there were times when you see such breakthrough for them, mm-hmm. such incredible breakthrough. And it's simple things, but they matter because mm-hmm. what happens to these kids growing up is they grow up realizing how different they are from other kids. They don't realize that there's much more about them that's like other people, but they only see their differences. Mm-hmm. They grow up feeling very, they have no self-esteem, no self-confidence whatsoever. Mm. And so any little thing you can do, like just getting them out of their parents' house and a few successes under their belt is huge for them mm-hmm. because they really think they're going to spend their lives in their bedrooms in their parents' house, and then that's where they're going to live. That's not what their parents want for them, of mm-hmm. course. So opportunities for them to go to college, for them to get out of their parents' house, to work a job, even if it isn't the job, the ideal job mm-hmm. for them, any success at all in the least little thing tells them, I did that.
I can do it.
I can do it.
Welcome to Health Hats, empowering people as they travel together toward best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege, living in a food oasis who can afford many hats, and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare, and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in healthcare's Tower of Babel. Let's make some sense of all of this. Today, we talk with Mary Lawler, a teacher and a trailblazer in the support of young adults on the autism spectrum transitioning into college. As a special education teacher, Mary found that entry to a path to college and success in college wasn't open for young adults on the autism spectrum. She opened that door, first in high school and then in college, developing a program that created an opportunity for their personal breakthroughs. In the patient caregiver activist world, we often talk about patients included. Mary is an expert in parents included. I'm inspired by Mary's leadership and her compassion. Mary, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I'm sitting here with Mary Lawler. Oh, how long have we known each other, Mary? You were one of my wife's first friends and one of her oldest friends. And I've known Ann for 46 years, and you probably knew her 10 years before that.
Yeah, we met when we were 14.
Okay. This is a while.
Yeah.
Do you remember where you were when you first realized that health was fragile?
Yes. I was 14 years old. My father was 42. My mother was in the hospital having a skin graft done on her ankle. And my father had a heart attack.
Oh my goodness.
And I spent that summer taking care of my five younger siblings, so worried about my dad. And for the rest of my life, I worried about him dying suddenly. Mm. So yeah, health is fragile.
Health
is
fragile.
And I learned it early, yeah.
I'm doing a series on young adults with complex medical conditions who are transitioning from pediatric to adult medicine. In this series, I've interviewed people who are young adults and mid-young adults and
adults and some of their parents, then sometimes together, and a clinician who works with young adults. And I was interested in talking to you because of the work you've done with young people on the autism spectrum who are going to college. I remember you telling me about your work with this group of people. Can you tell me about the work you've done?
Yeah. Well, I started out in school districts working with overseeing programming for children with disabilities, special education programming. About 10 years into that career, New York State changed its requirements for graduation and began to require that all students, even those with disabilities, take and pass 5 Regents exams in order to graduate from high school, except for the most seriously disabled children. Everybody thought that most children with disabilities could not meet that standard. Now, they did have a safety net for them, so they could, for the first 5 years of this requirement, they could take a less demanding exam, and if they got at least an 85 on it, they could earn a Regents diploma.
Okay.
So that helped. But over the course of the next 5 years, we really worked and succeeded in getting most kids through a Regents level curriculum and Regents level exams to graduate.
What kind of disabilities are we talking about here?
Well, these are children with reading disabilities, dyslexia and other reading disabilities, dysgraphia. They can't write. They have thoughts in their heads, but they can't get them on paper well.
Mm-hmm.
More general learning disabilities where they just don't do well academically, even though they're intelligent. Attention deficit disorders, emotional disturbance problems, Asperger's syndrome, just all of those invisible disabilities that people like to think are hooey, but they're not. They're very real to the people who have them and to the people trying to teach them. We really increased the number of students earning Regents diplomas being forced by New York State to do that. Then, as my career responsibilities changed and I became the director of special education and I had to complete the data collection process for the state of New York, I realized that even though these children were getting Regents diplomas, they were not going to college.
Mm-hmm.
The counselors, the guidance counselors, the school counselors in the school were not encouraging them to go to college. People didn't believe that they could go to college and be successful. So then we figured out that, well, they could be successful in college if they had the kinds of supports they had in high school. But colleges generally don't provide that level of support. They'll give some test accommodations, extended time, separate location, but not one-on-one tutoring, interceding for the students with professors, which is a huge piece of support, effective support for them. What happened was this man approached the school district I was working for and talked about wanting to start a college program for these students as they attended college. And we identified a small private college in Buffalo, New York, who was very interested and avid in working with us to provide support. We were going to provide all the support for them. They would provide the primary instruction. And so that was the first program that I worked in.
This was after you left the school district?
I left the school district to do this.
Okay.
Because myself and all of the special ed teachers at the high school level knew that these kids could do more. These are smart kids, ending up working in grocery stores. They weren't pursuing a post-secondary education. So we started a support program for them. It can be very effective. Some of their needs are very complex and they're a little more difficult, but many of them were able to take and pass college level courses with the kind of support we were providing. Several of them, out of a first group of 18 kids, ended up earning a college degree, a bachelor's degree, in everything from business to English literature to accounting. The supports we provided were, one, individual tutoring, if they needed it. Two, and this was so big, what came to be called executive functioning support, organizational skills support, time management support, soft things like perseverance despite anxiety, despite a failure, to be able to bounce back, to be able to say, okay, I'm not going to quit just because I had one failure. I'm going to keep going. The ability to sit in a classroom and listen and know you're not catching it all and not panicking and running out or quitting. Mm-hmm. So these are really soft skills that they really need for all of life. But so many people learn it in college, in high school and college. These are the skills you learn that people don't realize you're learning. Nobody teaches it to you, but you learn. So we taught it very explicitly to these students. And there was a guy, Danny, I don't remember his name, but I could get it for you once I get home. He did amazing work in this area, identifying what these skills are. And then we were able to really teach them these skills, and they're crucial. So we did that executive functioning support, social skill development, social thinking, teaching them how to think socially in ways that they doesn't come naturally to them. Basic life skills, learning to go to bed on time, get up in the morning, get to class on time, set alarms so you don't get distracted in the library and forget to go to your afternoon class. And just time management is so big for them.
What was their interaction with the medical system?
Well, the biggest interaction with the medical system by far was that many of them were on psychotropic drugs.
Okay.
Medications.
A psychotropic is any drug capable of affecting the mind, emotions, and behavior.
And these are all controlled substances, so we had to transfer them from their treating physician that was now out of town and get them Buffalo-based physicians, psychiatrists, etc., to monitor and prescribe these drugs.
How'd that go?
It was hard to find good psychiatry treatment. Buffalo is not a small city, but not a huge city. The number of psychiatrists is limited. And what I mean by a good psychiatrist is not one who knows his or her stuff, but one who understands these students. And that's a subcategory of psychiatry.
So did you end up identifying, well, here's one, two, three that did get it, and then
we would
work with them.
Send our students to them.
Yeah.
And the thing is that psychotropic drugs have some fairly serious side effects often. It makes students sleepy, so you deal with not wanting to get up in the morning a lot. It's a big problem for them. It can flatten their affect, and they already struggle with social things, and so they don't come across to people as particularly personable or social.
And so finding the right balance.
Right.
How about your interaction with the parents? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
The program that I ran was very expensive. Very expensive. Plus, there was college tuition and room and board and all of that added on to it. So the parents of these students, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, were very, very committed to their children and maximizing their well-being and getting them a good education. They were willing and able to invest into it. And so the parents were very supportive, by and large. Always some problem parents. Many parents have worked really hard throughout their child's life, trying to get them to fit into the educational systems and often the healthcare systems that they dealt with. And so in our program, we stayed in very close touch with parents. We talked to them two or three times a week. And we made sure, first of all, unlike so many things in college, they don't contact parents. They don't think parents should be involved anymore. They kind of tell parents, leave them alone, let them do what they're going to do. But that doesn't work for our students. And so I found parents who I knew had fought really hard with school districts and were often like the biggest headaches of school districts. And I knew who those parents were. But they know their child better than anybody. And they were a great source of strategies and ways of helping their kid be successful. So we would definitely access that as a resource. And then we would keep them informed about little successes, because a student can do something today, like pass a test, and that's a victory. Passing a test is a victory for one of these students. So we would let parents know, hey, he got a B on this test, or he got to class on time every day this week. The parents had this constant sense of, oh, it's working. It gave them a lot of hope and optimism for their son or daughter. Some parents, because they've had to do so much throughout their child's life, they have trouble letting go. We started saying the things the colleges were saying. Don't talk to your student independently and tell them what to do. Or if they call you five times a day, tell them, no, don't call me five times a day. Call me three times a week. Otherwise, go to Mary or go to Vicky or go to Kristen, so that they were accessing us as their support rather than their mom or dad. And that helped them become more independent, because these kids, young adults, struggle so much with anxiety. Anxiety is by far their worst enemy. And they can be on medications for anxiety and still struggle with severe anxiety, especially when they feel overwhelmed or they don't know what to do in a situation, or somebody approaches them and wants something from them and they don't know how to respond. It just sets them into a tailspin.
You did this for 10 years?
I did it for 8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
And how long ago was it?
I stopped about 4 years ago.
So have you, say in the last year, have you heard from or heard of former students?
I have.
And so tell me a little bit about that. So what's happened in that period of time since you saw them last in their lives?
But the next hurdle is successful employment.
Yeah.
In their field of interest.
Yeah.
So for instance, Jacob got a degree in accounting. He had close to a 4.0, if not 4.0, I would say a 3.8, grade point average. Graduated with honors from a good college, but cannot find a job in the field. And that's because his other issues make it difficult for an employer to find enough value in him. He knows accounting inside and out, but he's distractible. He panics. He blurts things out that people know you shouldn't say at work.
So are the challenges pretty much behavioral, or are they also precarious medical conditions or other?
It really depends on the person. Some have comorbid serious health problems. Well, I guess anxiety is a medical condition, right? So that's a big one. One of our students had diabetes. One of our students had serious allergies. We had to always watch him.
Sounds like there was a lot of coordination in this.
Huge amounts of coordination.
Okay.
Yeah, huge.
On the one hand, you were providing, I'm not saying primary care, but you were the primary supporters.
Yes.
But then there was also things that were beyond your skill.
Yes.
And that you had to, that were part of success.
Yes.
Okay.
And the other thing about these young people that affects their health status is they are extremely sedentary.
Oh.
They spend hours and hours and hours behind computers.
Oh.
That is where they are the most comfortable. Mm. That is where they can be themselves. They have friends all over the world that they play video games with, and their relationships that they can't have in person. But they're good at the game, and so these people, other people like to play with them.
Interesting.
So that's a problem. They don't eat healthy food. We really tried. We had a wellness piece to our support program where we took them out hiking and took them places where they exercised, and we taught them how to eat well, but it wasn't their food of choice.
Yeah.
And so they eat very poorly. A lot of them are overweight, considerably overweight. So, although when they're young, those habits haven't really profoundly affected their health yet, if they don't change.
Right. And psychotropics don't help either.
Yeah.
That just makes it all so much more challenging.
Yeah.
See the show notes or my website, www.health-hats.com. For more information or to subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks.
If you were gonna advise parents or either high school or college programs now, what's at top of mind in terms of pearls of wisdom that you've gotten from all these years that you would say, after all this time, I would say, here are a couple you just got to have?
Well, you have to have the supports that individual person needs. Okay. They don't all need all of it, mm-hmm. but they need what they need. And to look up for it until you find it. And the good news is
Which support?
Yes. Look for a situation, a college or an independent program that supports these students in college that is going to work for your son or daughter.
Okay.
Some of them need way more support than others. Mm-hmm. Some need medium support and some need less support. More and more colleges across the country are starting their own programs. They probably don't provide the kind of support that we provided. We were like, for the most, the students who needed the very most support, mm-hmm. our program was designed for them. And then there's in between things.
Customization.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And?
Believe that they can do it. There's no way they're going through college in 4 quick years.
Right.
It's going to take 6 years. Mm-hmm. Very few of them can handle a full-time course load. Start with 2 courses, 3 if they do that well. Make sure they're connected with a good counselor that will work closely with them, someone who can monitor their medications, a medical person, a psychiatrist, or a mm-hmm. nurse practitioner, or someone who can get to know them well mm-hmm. and that they'll confide in about how they're feeling about mm-hmm. things. There were times when you see such breakthrough for them, mm-hmm. such incredible breakthrough, and it's simple things, but they matter because mm-hmm. what happens to these kids growing up is they grow up realizing how different they are from other kids. They don't realize that there's much more about them that's like other people, but they only see their differences. Mm-hmm. They grow up feeling very... they have no self-esteem, no self-confidence whatsoever. Mm. And so any little thing you can do, like just getting them out of their parents' house and a few successes under their belt is huge for them mm-hmm. because they really think they're going to spend their lives in their bedrooms in their parents' house, and then that's where they're going to live. That's not what their parents want for them, of course. So opportunities for them to go to college, for them to get out of their parents' house, to work a job, even if it isn't the ideal job mm-hmm. for them, any success at all in the least little thing tells them, I did that.
I can do it.
I can do it.
So not only are you saying that they have a success, but they know they have a success.
Yes.
So it's the two together.
Yes.
Yeah.
And something as big as earning a college degree, I mean, in and of itself, it is such a tremendous accomplishment for them. If mm-hmm. they work in a grocery store afterwards, not the ideal, but what an accomplishment for someone like this. Mm-hmm. And of course, more and more I'm hearing and I see people starting companies for these people, mm-hmm. which is a great idea. I know a dad who started a program of like computer graphic design or something, and a lot of these kids do computers really well. And he started this whole graphic design company just for people on the autism spectrum.
Wow.
And so there's more and more of that kind of thing mm-hmm. happening, which is really encouraging. when I was still working in the program, a woman who had a big job on Wall Street. She worked for like a big financial institution. I don't remember the name of which one, doesn't matter. Very, very successful woman. She had a son with Asperger's syndrome. And when he approached college age and all of that, she quit her job and she started a not-for-profit to help these kids get internships on Wall Street.
Wow.
And it was happening. I actually got one of our students in the program I was running an offer from a company on Wall Street. But he said they called him instead of us.
Oh.
And he said, well, no, I'm not really all that interested.
Oh, gee.
So just blew his opportunity.
Yeah.
But more and more and more you see little things happening along those lines.
Yeah.
And that is huge. More and more colleges are starting programs. I know the college we worked with, they've actually started their own. They learned from us how to do it and started their own program. And they can do it less expensively.
Yeah.
It's not quite what we did. Like, we had the staff who would go to student apartments and wake kids up in the morning.
I see.
Colleges aren't going to do that.
So you're a trailblazer.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah, congratulations.
But I didn't do it myself. I mean,
no. You had a team.
It takes a team.
Sure it does.
It takes a really big, good team to do it.
Well, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
This is great. Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time.
No problem. I enjoyed it.
Best health, living at maximum capacity given your genetics, social circumstances, and physical environment, requires a team. We think of health teams often as people, patients, caregivers and parents, and medical professionals. We can forget about the people on our team in the community. Leaders like Mary Lawler, creating opportunities for best health. Thank you, Mary. Follow my blog, podcasts, and resources through my website. See you around the block.